yeah, I know which one you mean. A modern-day Stanley steamer, eh?
Well, it wasn't steam. It wasn't
water.
Steam, and this car would go 60.
This is the Quality News Network. In Brussels, the UN Secretary General met with the foreign ministers of European Union nations for an emergency meeting to discuss the 15,000-member UN peacekeeping force in southern Lebanon. The European countries will contribute the backbone of that force, 6,900 troops. However, it could take up to 3 months to put that force into place, according to European officials. Malaysia, Indonesia, and Bangladesh have also offered troops. However, Israel opposes troop deployment from Muslim countries as part of the international force. The Hamas-run Palestinian Authority claims that progress is being made to release two Fox News journalists kidnapped on August 14th in Gaza. Their captors set a deadline of midday Saturday. In southern Iraq, the day after a former British base was turned over to Iraqi troops, it was nearly destroyed by looters. The locals reportedly took everything, including doors, metal pipes, roofing, and window frames, as several unarmed Iraqi soldiers stood by and watched. In Tehran, the New York Times reports that there have been very few visitors at the exhibit of 200 anti-Jewish cartoons at the Palestinian Contemporary Art Museum. It was organized as a contest in response to a Danish cartoon that made fun of the Prophet Muhammad last year. In South Korea, the presidential security advisor said his country will cooperate with China to prevent North Korea from conducting a possible nuclear test. There have been increased reports recently of suspicious activity around a North Korean testing site. In Minnesota, at the Mayo Clinic, President Gerald Ford is still hospitalized after undergoing an angioplasty procedure. On Monday, the 93-year-old received a cardiac pacemaker. New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin defended the delays in post-Katrina reconstruction by taking a swipe at New York City. In a CBS 60 Minutes interview, Nagin said, quote, "You guys in New York can't get a hole in the ground fixed, and it's 5 years later, so let's be fair," end quote. In Washington, a senior policy analyst at the EPA fears that workers and residents cleaning up in the Gulf area could be exposed to asbestos and mold, and warns there could be long-term health consequences. In Miami, the head of the National Hurricane Center, Max Mayfield, announced today that he will retire in January. And at Cape Canaveral, Florida, weather forecasters say storms expected before Sunday's launch of the space shuttle Atlantis could delay the launch. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A federal judge in New York has stopped a proposed strike by Northwest flight attendants by issuing a temporary injunction. The judge stated he needs more time before making a final decision. In Tokyo, five Japanese executives were arrested on suspicion of exporting equipment that could be used to make nuclear weapons. The devices went to Malaysia in 2001. Lenovo, the Chinese computer maker, has hired its fourth executive from Dell this week. Dell is the number one PC maker worldwide. Last year, Lenovo bought IBM's personal computer business business, making it the world's third largest computer maker. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke warned against protectionist policies. He urged policymakers to avoid pushing for these because they could hurt globalization and international trade. Toyota may delay some of its models as a way to strengthen quality control and avoid recalls. Bloomberg News is reporting that Ford Motor has begun talks to sell its luxury brands Jaguar and Land Rover. And retailers and economists report that higher energy prices are forcing many American consumers to cut back on frills and non-essential purchases and hold off buying big-ticket items. Light sweet crude settled at $72.47 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange today. And near the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow is down 20 points, the NASDAQ is up 3 points, the S&P 500 is flat. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff. The time is now 5 minutes past the hour.
Roll up your sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning.
Monday warrior, me's right. Today's Tom Sawyer, me's right.
It's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and expect the working people to pay for their billionaires' games, it's time for the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream each and every day. You can get in on the program by dialing in to 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And now, your host, Bruce Birch.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Bruce Birch, and you are on the Bruce Birch radio program for this Friday afternoon. It is absolutely, it's very warm outside. Damned hot, actually. And the dog days of summer are rapidly going to turn into the Indian summer here very soon here in the eastern United States, where summer is very humid. So you sweat a lot. Oh, boy. Anyway, got a lot of interesting items to be presented on the show today, not the least of which, not the least of which is a situation that seems to be gathering steam and is no good. It's not good at all, and that is that there's seems to be a considerable amount of hate attacks on homeless people here in the United States. And a little bit later on in the program, I'm going to have Michael Stoops, who is the executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless out of Washington. He'll be on the show to talk about their work and some of the things that they've found out. They've done studies on these hate crimes, and he's going to talk to us about some of the things that they're doing. Also, we're going to have later on, after Michael is on, we're going to have David Swanson, and David Swanson is the press guy for Camp Democracy, which is going to be kicking off next week on the Mall in Washington, D.C. There's going to be a three-week-long encampment on the Mall in Washington, D.C. to bring attention to the, the criminals at 1600 West Pennsylvania Avenue there. So that'll be we'll have him on to talk about what they're doing there in D.C., when they're going to get started, et cetera, and should be an interesting conversation. And also, your calls are very welcome at 877-443-2366. You can also email me if you're so inclined to do that. You can email me, bruce@brucebirch.com. And let's see, anything else? Oh, yes, my blog site, obviously, over at brucebirch.com. And also, looks like we've got some interesting news we're going to be presenting at some point, either this evening or Monday, and I'll let you know what that is, either today or Monday. We'll figure that out as we go. And also, just if you're new to the program, welcome aboard. Glad to have you with us. If you want to avail yourself of our in-depth experience of the Head On Radio Network, do go check out the chat room at headonradionetwork.com. You can go there, click live chat on the left-hand side of the page, and that'll get you right into the chat room where there are a number of people hanging out this afternoon talking about, the sky's the limit. You know, they're talking about, you're liable to run into anything in the chat room. They may be talking about Italian recipes or how to impeach a president. You never know. It's always a fun time there in the chat. But the main topic that I wanted to cover this hour is about a tax on the homeless. Now, yes, you know, we do have a war going on or an occupation going on, I should say, in Iraq. We have a situation in Afghanistan where, you know, the security has pretty much gone to hell in a handbasket, and we've decided that we're pretty much giving it up to the drug lords there. You know, we have, what else do we have going on? We have a situation in Lebanon where the Israelis tried to pretty much wipe everyone who is of Lebanese descent off the face of the planet. We have a situation in Iran where they're ratcheting up the rhetoric about what's going on with the nuclear situation there. A lot of things going on around the world that we should be paying attention to, and I'm sure that 90% of the rest of the world is paying attention to those things. But there's always that one topic that seems to be missing, and I'm going to bring it to your attention this afternoon, and that topic is about the homeless. And we have in the United States a national crisis with homelessness. The numbers are amazing, anywhere from a million to who knows how many sleep outside every night. During the summertime, of course, that number drops a little bit, and during the wintertime it goes up because of seasonal work and people are able to afford to buy to have a single room occupancy room or room in a boarding house or whatever. But the encampments that are growing around the country, you know, you can't tell a homeless person that the economy's in recovery. Doesn't work. Can't tell them that because they know that it's bull. In Nashville, Tennessee, on August 11th, Tara Cole, who had been living on the streets of Nashville for more than 3 years, spent her last night alive, sleeping on a boat ramp along the Cumberland River. She was killed in the early hours of August 11 when two males pushed her into the river. Other homeless people couldn't save her. Howard Allen, a homeless man who helped organize a nightly vigil for Cole, said she was one person, but it terrorized the entire homeless population. Police have said that a body pulled from the river this week is likely Cole, and two men were arrested Thursday and charged with her homicide in what authorities said was an unprovoked attack. Homeless advocates around the nation are saying that such violence is on the rise. Often the attackers are teenagers or young adults who are more affluent than their victims. A 2005 report by the National Coalition for the Homeless showed 86 violent attacks on homeless people in 2005 compared with 60 in 1999. Those numbers are likely low, according to Michael Stoops, who I'll have on later in the program, because they only reflect attacks that have been documented in public records. And let me tell you something. Knowing what I know about the homeless population and knowing what I know about the circumstances in which many of them live, the fact that someone would come and report a violent act is very slim because they have an inherent paranoia about the police. The police are not to be trusted. Well, in a lot of places, the police may even be the ones who are committing some of the crimes. You never know. Stoops has said that in the 1980s, attacks appeared to plague only big cities on the East and West Coast. Now the coalition has documented incidents in 165 cities nationwide, 42 states, and Puerto Rico. See, the problem here, ladies and gentlemen, the problem here with this, what is it? What's the problem? Well, it's a twofold problem, in my view. Number one, those people should not be on the streets. That's the first problem. We need to have a nationwide housing creation. And these folks who are on the streets need to be put into housing. Now, you know, I may say some things that may sound crazy, and that's fine, but I have a very radical view about what constitutes putting people back into housing. See, in many, many places, people believe that you need to put someone through programs and halfway houses, and only then may they go into permanent housing. Well, I'm going to say something that may shock you. I think we should pick people off the street, go around to camps, and ask them, would you be willing to go into your own apartment? We'll pay the rent for a while until you can get on your feet. Would you be willing to do that? And if they say yes, you pack them up, their belongings, take them to their apartment, hand them a key, and walk away. Because the reality is that someone who is homeless is as much deserving of housing and their own rights as anyone else who isn't homeless. If they want to sit in their own home and have a beer, by golly, they ought to be able to do that and not be subjected to programmatic rules that may throw them out of their programming. Studies have shown that homeless who are in permanent housing are much more likely to engage in services than those who are in other types of housing, such as transitional housing or halfway houses or the like. That they're much more likely and much less likely to utilize emergency rooms as primary care. The matter of fact is, in a stability, put someone in a stable environment, and chances are their lives may become somewhat more stable. Dig that. We're going to talk to Michael Stoops here in about 15 minutes or so, but first I have to take a break, and when we come back, I'll go back to this story, and we'll talk a little bit more about hate crimes on the homeless. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
Start to mold a new reality closer to the heart, closer to the heart. Blacksmith and the artist reflected in their art, they forge their creativity closer to the...
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Great universities never set out simply to reflect the communities in which they exist. Rather, they serve as seedbeds of change in an ever-changing world. They take pride in being places where truth is freely sought, where inquiry is encouraged, where new ideas and new ways can develop and flourish at the expense of the old. When a true academic community, instructors and students together, acts and expresses itself freely, without fear, all of society benefits. Concord University is already using this new set of challenges as opportunities to serve in ways that strengthen its dedication to community, its commitment to service. In graduate education, in professional services to working professionals, in highly respected fields of study where standards remain high, in continuing to place graduates in the very best professional and graduate schools in the nation, Concord University remains the very best higher education bargain in this region. Don't ever allow yourself to accept anything less. Concord University, still since 1872, an education you can put to work. For an appointment, Call 1-800-344-6679.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
You're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's about 20 minutes past the hour here on the east coast of the United States. And before I jump back into that topic, I understand I have a call on line one that I want to take. Go ahead. How are you doing today, Gene?
Okay. How are you, Bruce?
I'm doing fantastic. What's going on?
Great. I was wanting to know about what you just suggested about putting the homeless up in an apartment instead of, you know, the halfway household. But I wanted to know, has anybody ever calculated the economic cost to society of the hate crime that's committed as opposed to that what you just said trying to do?
Well, there have been a number of studies, actually, Gene. They're not directly associated to hate crimes, but more associated to the economic benefit of having someone in permanent housing rather than on the street. The reality is that many, many homeless people use emergency rooms for, you know, sicknesses that perhaps could be handled by a clinic. Many homeless persons, like for instance, there was a study. I'll speak of one that I know that was done here in North Carolina. There was a study where there were over 800 telephone, 800 911 calls to the city police department in Asheville, North Carolina. Guess how many people were, how many homeless people were involved in those 800 calls?
You got me.
19.
Figures.
So, and these were folks who were, basically they lived downtown and they treated downtown as if it were their home. And as a result, you know, when you, pee in a flower pot,
yeah.
Someone's going to call the cops. Sleeping on the benches, you know, sleeping out in front of businesses, you know, that constantly were being called. Now, these 19 people that I'm aware of, 10 of them, were taken off the streets and put into what was called a Housing First model. Now, the Housing First is basically exactly what it's called. It's you provide the housing first and then other services later. And it's my understanding that of the 10, I think 8 were still in permanent housing the last time I checked.
Well, that sounds cool, but I'd really love to know somebody. I'd like to see the study on the economic cost of hate crime in general and in against the homeless in particular. I know you don't have those figures, but it'd be an interesting thing to figure out.
So the question you're wanting to know is the economic impact of hate crimes on the homeless?
On the homeless and society as a whole.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll see when Mr. Stoops is on here shortly. I'll ask him that question and see if there's see if he has an answer for that. Because if anyone would know, I'm sure it would be him.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Gene, and I appreciate you calling in. And I'll definitely get that question to Mr. Stoops, and we'll see what we can do about getting you an answer. Okay.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks for calling. All right, that was Gene, our headlines news ninja. He's the guy who does the blog posting for us and all of the news posting. Now, that's a very good question, though, and something to keep to consider in the housing first kind of model is does this serve the nature, does this serve the needs of the client? You know, there has been a huge push recently for therapies to be person-centered, client-centered therapies because they tend to work better. They tend to provide a better outcomes because if you are tailoring a so-called treatment plan or goal-centered planning for someone, then what happens is they have buy-in to the process and they want to do something different. But the reality is that you can do all the treatment planning and all the goal-centered, person-centered therapy and all this stuff, but if that person has to leave your office and go sleep outside for the night, what have you really accomplished? And what has he or she really accomplished? Now, a quick note of self-disclosure, and maybe some of you know this, maybe some of you don't. I myself was homeless at one time in my life for several years. And lived in all the places that you would imagine someone to live who was homeless. Shelters under the bridges and bushes. Reasons of that I'm sure I'll explain at some point later on. Keep you a little bit guessing there. And, you know, the reality is this. The reality is this. For a person who is homeless, every day is not about living, it is about simple survival. It's about trying to figure out where you're going to eat next. It's about trying to figure out where you're going to get resources next. It's about trying to keep your stuff from getting stolen. And yes, it's about trying to keep from being attacked, either by just regular folks or other homeless people. And believe it or not, there are some sick bastards out there that troll cities looking for homeless people that they can beat up on. You know? So it is a battle. It is probably the hardest existence I have ever lived in my life or ever experienced. I've never been to a war zone. I would imagine that would be worse because there's bullets flying over your head and you know, and people dying right in front of you. But the reality is being homeless in the United States of America is a very, very difficult way to live. I would say that that many of the homeless who die prematurely because of the fact that it is so difficult. Every year we have here in Guilford County, North Carolina, along with many, many other communities, there is what is called a Homeless Memorial Day, and it's usually around the first day of winter. And many people get together with and do a candlelight vigil or a service of some sort or, you know, some way to honor those that have died while still experiencing homelessness. And invariably, there is someone on the list who, if they had not been homeless, would still be with us today. That homelessness directly contributed to their demise in one way, shape, or form. I remember a few years ago a house burning down with five guys inside. They started a fire in the fireplace. Fireplace was full of bird, whatever, you know, bird nests and such, and caught the chimney on fire, and the house burned down around them and killed them all. Things should not be like that in the richest nation in the world, should it? Now, I don't advocate for a lot of radical stuff, or maybe I do. I don't know. You tell me. But the reality in this situation is that this is a national emergency. We have a national emergency on many, many fronts right now, including health care and the way that the seniors are being treated and the fact that we're involved in an illegal occupation of another country. But here at home, we also have another emergency that seems to be overlooked. And it's our job, I believe, it's our job because we do, you know, and I guess I'm trying to remember who said this. I think it was Franklin Roosevelt who said this. He said, "The worth of a society is not judged by its wealth. It's judged by the way it treats its poorer citizens. It's citizens that are sick and infirm." I wonder how we would match up against that idea at this point. Coming up here in just a minute, I will have Michael Stoops on to talk about hate crimes and the homeless and other things that he would like to discuss about the National Coalition for the Homeless and what their work that they're doing. After that, after the top of the hour, we'll have David Swanson on from Camp Democracy. But right now, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have Michael Stoops. This is Bruce Burch, and this is the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Almost every time I speak in public, I get asked about 9/11, usually with unquenchable vehemence. It seems that many people on the progressive side are convinced that Bush or Cheney were in on the deal. And everyone's an engineer. Lay people who never took a college science course all of a sudden are experts in civil and structural engineering. Well, I've been talking with leading civil engineers and with professors of engineering at some of the most prestigious schools in the country, and guess what? They don't buy the conspiracy claims. They very rationally explained to me that the Twin Towers collapsed just as you'd expect if you understood the impact of the crash and its location in each building. Then there's Building 7. Conspiracy theorists say that the fire was going out in that building, which wasn't hit by a plane, and still it came down. Well, I talked with the leader of the investigation team from FEMA and from the American Society of Civil Engineers, Dr. Gene Corley. He said, again in very rational terms, that the building had in fact sustained damage from the Twin Towers, causing the fire in Building 7, which burned for 8 hours. Over that time, the steel degraded. The building was designed to withstand a fire for only 3 hours, not 8 hours, he said. As to the Pentagon, he says the so-called small hole was not all that small and that the walls were stronger than the tower's walls, so you'd expect a smaller hole anyway. He also said that bits of the American Airlines plane were actually found at the Pentagon and that there's a photo of the plane just as it entered the Pentagon's parking lot. By the way, conspiracy theorists can't explain what happened to the people who were actually on that plane, Flight 77, if it didn't hit the Pentagon. Where did they all go? Roswell, New Mexico? Now, I suppose the conspiracy theorists will say that Gene Corley is in on the conspiracy and that the other engineers and professors I talked to are in on the conspiracy. And hell, that Rothschild, he's in on the conspiracy, too. We'll get over it. The 9/11 conspiracy theory is a cul-de-sac. It leads nowhere. It's anti-science. And it distracts us from the urgent issues at hand, ending the Iraq War and stopping Bush before he wars again in Iran. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fix stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Clean up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything.
Yeah!
A
public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
I can feel no sense of measure, no illusions as we take refuge in young man's pleasure, breaking down the dreams we make.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's about 35 minutes past the hour here on the Head On Radio Network. If you want to, let's see, I've got a couple interviews coming up, so I won't give out the phone number just yet. Joining me on the phone, however, is Michael Stoops, and Michael is with the National Coalition for the Homeless, the executive director of that organization, and has been there for a few years. Michael, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's good to be on your show.
It's great to have you. It's great to have you. Now, very quickly, tell us a little bit about what the National Coalition for the Homeless does, and then we'll get into some of the other topics that I mentioned to you earlier.
Well, the National Coalition for the Homeless, we're the nation's oldest and largest homelessness advocacy group. We work on poverty issues, housing issues, living wage issues, and civil rights issues, which includes the criminalization of homelessness in this country, and also hate crimes and violence against homeless people.
And leading right into that, right before you came on in the last segment, I was talking a little bit about the attack that happened in Nashville with Tara Cole and the fact that she was murdered by a couple of men there. Tell me about hate crimes in the United States. How prevalent is this? I mean, it seems like the numbers have gone up, but how prevalent is this, and how closely to reality are these numbers that have been presented?
Well, because of the failed policies of the Bush administration, 40% of the nation's homeless are forced to live outside because there's not enough shelter beds, and for sure there's not enough low-income subsidized housing. So we have a lot of people who are living outside in vulnerable conditions. We have been documenting hate crimes and violence against homeless people ever since 1999, when seven homeless people in the fall of 99 in Denver were killed and two were even beheaded. And the culprits, as in most cases, were teenagers and young adults. And most recently in Nashville, two young white men were caught pushing a homeless woman into the Cumberland River in downtown Nashville, and a woman happened to be black, so we don't know whether it was a hate crime, but in reality the young people probably would have pushed me in the river if I had been living by the river that night last week.
When they now, my understanding is that they have been caught and have been charged with her homicide, and according to the article, the authorities are saying that it was an unprovoked attack. Is this something that happens? I mean, are these people, are the homeless folks just sort of minding their own business when these things happen, or does it happen? I mean, you know, what usually brings about this kind of stuff?
Well, some of the attacks are planned hate crimes. In the Nashville incident, there four young people decided to go into Nashville to party, and two decided to go out and specifically harass homeless people. That was their intent, and they achieved their aims. Some of the crimes are hate crimes for sure. Some are crimes of opportunity because they know that they can find homeless people in any downtown area of this country. So for sure, crimes of opportunity, group mentality, the teens being high on drugs and alcohol during the summertime, teens are not working like they used to. I think people think that they can beat up homeless people, that it's cool to do, that the homeless won't fight back, the police won't show concern, and nobody will care. And it's really a sad commentary. We have documented 169 homeless people in the last 7 years who have been killed by teenagers and young adults, and the most recent example caught on surveillance tape other than Nashville was in January in Fort Lauderdale, where three white teenagers caught on surveillance tape with baseball bats beating to death one African-American man and surviving a Hispanic man and another African-American man. So there's definitely something going on. And we also note that many cities are demonizing the homeless population. Orlando and Las Vegas just passed laws saying that you can't feed the homeless in public parks. And when you pass laws like that, it gives the impression to that 1% of American teenagers that is, hey, it's okay to go hurt bums because even the mayor and the police don't like them.
Well, yeah, and you're absolutely right, and I've noticed that seems to be that there's several cities here recently that have done that. I know Las Vegas did one recently, and I think there was another one in Florida.
Yeah, Orlando, right.
Orlando. And you know, and it's amazing to me that there is no outcry about it, or doesn't appear to be any public outcry. How many people are on the streets right now, Michael,
On any given night? We really don't know, but the best scientific numbers we have are 800,000 on any given night, 3.5 million over the course of a year. And despite what the Bush administration has been saying, that homelessness is decreasing, poverty and homelessness is increasing in America due to the cutbacks in important entitlement programs on the federal level.
Now, when you say cutbacks in entitlement programs, which ones specifically have been?
They're talking about ending homelessness, but they're creating more of it at the same time by cutting food stamps, housing, Section 8, Medicaid, et cetera, which is going to cause many more people to become homeless. So we expect to see continuing increases in homelessness in America due to the current policies of the Bush administration.
Which brings to mind a question that I've been wanting to ask folks who are working at the national level. The whole effort, the whole 10-year plan to end homelessness, I wanted to ask you about that just for a second because I don't know. I mean, I really have no idea what your opinion is on it or anything. But, you know, as you said, they're working, you know, there's a homelessness Cesar, I guess you could
mm-hmm, right.
point man, Philip Mangano, who coordinates the
U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness.
Right, Interagency Council on Homelessness. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, he's been flying around the country and has been advocating communities to develop 10-year plans within their communities to end homelessness. How realistic is that, first of all? And I mean, you know, is this just sort of like a PR stunt, or you know, is it realistic that communities can actually do that?
Well, in terms of the Bush administration, I think it's a good thing from the president on down. I don't hear the president talking about ending homelessness, but many mayors around the country are talking about ending homelessness, and then communities are developing 10-year plans. And a plan is maybe a good document, but I wonder why we spend so much time into developing the plan. Why don't we just end homelessness? And then I think the president's faith-based initiative is not necessarily a bad thing, but if charity, if faith-based efforts, if volunteerism, if that would have solved homelessness, it would have done so 25 years ago. Right now, the federal government is trying to end homelessness on an allocation of dollars of $1.3 billion for the whole country. You could spend that amount in North Carolina, and there would still be people living in shelters and on the streets. So they're talking about ending it, but they're creating more of it at the same time by cutting Medicaid by $30 billion over the next 10 years. So to me, a plan is a useless document unless there's commitment of both private and public dollars, city, county, state, federal, and also from the private sector. And I don't see that happening. And I predict 10 years from now, they will put a spin on it that we have decreased homelessness in America But we need another 10 years to do it. And, you know, homeless people are tired of waiting. Our waiting list for Section 8 or subsidized housing here in Washington, D.C., is we have 30,000 people on the waiting list, and the wait is 20 years to get to the very top. And in most cities around the country, it's 10 years. So poor people are tired of waiting. They need permanent places to be. They need supportive services. But more importantly, they need a job that pays a living wage, and they need universal health care. And we're not doing that in this country.
No, we're not. And you know, all of those things I think is fantastic. That's part of your vision, because I know that there are other national homeless organizations that, I, you know, in my view, have to be politically expedient in the current political climate, have not signed on to some of those issues.
Right, right. Yeah,
but we all know what the root causes of homelessness are.
Mm-hmm, right. We got the U.S. Conference of Mayors to consider a resolution expanding the federal definition of homelessness, which today only you have to be in a shelter or on the streets. And we wanted the more inclusive definition to make so that people who were doubled and tripled up, which is, or people in motels, would be included. But Phil Mangano lobbied the mayors not to table the resolution because they don't want to expand the definition, because that means they're going to have to come up with a lot more money. You know, when we try to fight wars, we don't try to nickel and dime fighting wars. But when we try to fight poverty in this country, I think there's a belief that people think that the charity system can handle this issue. We are overwhelmed. The shelters are full. People are being turned away, and homelessness is increasing under this current administration.
You know, you quoted the number of 800,000 people on any given night. What, I mean, how, I guess I'm looking for a specific, maybe if you can enlighten me, as a result of the Katrina victims, which of course the anniversary is coming up next week, how many more people are you guys aware that are now homeless, still homeless, as a result of that catastrophe down there in Louisiana?
The Katrina folks spread throughout the country, as you know, but they're being cut off for how long they can stay in hotels, etc. So their numbers, those people are trickling into the homeless population, but in places like Biloxi and Gulfport, some of the shelters that served the old and regular homeless before the hurricane are no longer there. So we are receiving a lot more reports of people living in woods, people camped out, people living in campgrounds around the country. And so it has the potential of doubling the current homeless population, but we're not going to see that overnight. It's going to be a gradual approach, and it will be interesting to see how our government responds, and so far we have not responded very well.
So, any ideas on numbers as far as how many people may be estimated to be homeless as a result of that still now?
The figures range from 400 to 700,000 potentially who could become homeless, but they are being turned away from the shelters because they're regular shelters are already full, and so there's really no room at the end. So if they cut people out of their FEMA trailers or their hotel rooms, these folks will have no place to go, and we need to figure out a way to address those needs.
And that would be in addition to the 800,000 number that you already told me.
Right, and that's true.
So that could be anywhere from as far as, you know, just let's say a conservative figure. I hate to use the word conservative because it has that word con in it. But let's say a conservative figure of, say, 1.1 million right now. Would that be an unrealistic number?
I think over like a 3 to 4 year period, you know, when President Clinton agreed to when he signed the welfare reform legislation that the Republicans pushed through Congress, overnight, we did not see thousands of welfare recipients winding up on the streets, but it was a gradual process. And that's when we first saw a spike in family homelessness in the late 1990s, and that continues through this current century.
Let's talk about veterans for a minute. and homeless veterans in particular. When what's what you know now? I had Larry Scott on yesterday. I don't know if you know who he is. He runs a website called VAWatchdog.org,
mm-hmm.
and it's a very informative site that sort of brings up, you know, tells people what's going on within the VA. Is there a realistic effort among the VA now to try to get homeless veterans in out of, you know, out of the off the streets and into housing now, or is that still sort of not working very well?
I'm a conscientious objector from the Vietnam War days, and I always thought it was, even though I was a CO and I did my alternative service, I always thought it was wrong that we allowed Vietnam veterans to become homeless when they came home from the war. Today, the closest neighbor to the president is a friend of mine who's a World War II Korean veteran, and he's about 80 years of age, a guy named Charlie, and he's concerned that we have not learned from the mistakes of not treating Vietnam veterans very well, allowing them to become homeless. And so Charlie believes in his heart that anybody who serves their country in a combat zone, who gets messed up from seeing the horrors of war, or they get addicted to drugs or alcohol, or when they come back from the war, they're suddenly unemployed, he believes that we need to make sure we don't repeat the mistakes of the past. So I think it's something that both liberals and conservatives should agree that we should not allow our veterans to become homeless in our society. But many are returning to the wooded areas next to the military bases in this country, and will soon someday have another memorial for the veterans of this war. And it's interesting. We have a number of memorials in D.C. World War II just came to be, Korea, Vietnam, et cetera. And the veterans who served their country, who are now homeless during those war eras, they make a point to camp near the Korean War Memorial if they were a Korean War vet. So it's kind of interesting that the war is still very much a part of their psyche, even though it's been 30 years since they were in Vietnam.
That's really interesting that that actually the homeless veterans who served in those conflicts are stay close to those right. those memorials.
So right now the percentage of as of about 2 years ago, the veteran population among the homeless population was about 11%, but it's gradually increasing. And during the 70s and 80s, 30% of the for sure the homeless men were veterans. So we're seeing the numbers climb. The VA doesn't, you know, they do outpatient programs, but homeless veterans need housing and employment and psychiatric care, and they're really not providing that. So I have very little encouragement from the Veterans Administration.
Shifting gears just for a moment, I had a listener who called up to the show right before you came on, and one of the things that he asked to that I didn't have the answer for, and maybe you might, is he wanted to know about the economic impact of hate crimes on the homeless, and you know, as far as the society's cost for some of these incidents, you know, and what kind of impact that has on local economies.
Well, I think the criminalization of homelessness, you know, when you think about it, no city in the country shelters all of its homeless population, but yet they continue to allow people to live on the streets, and people are forced to go to emergency rooms and forced to be undiagnosed or to take their medications for mental health or physical issues. I think in the long run, and when they arrest people for sleeping, camping, begging on the streets, the cost of the criminal justice system is very high. And so the bottom line is that it costs us more money to allow someone to wander the streets than it would be to provide them with permanent housing and supportive social services. And you know, when a homeless person dies, and of the 169 that have been killed by teens over the last 7 years, many times their death goes unnoticed, because when you're homeless, nobody knows your name, and many times homeless folks are not in touch with friends or relatives. So there is a financial cost, but for sure is the moral cost. We had a person 5 years ago in Washington, D.C., who lay dead in a D.C. doorway for 6 days before anyone realized that something was wrong. And I think we've all, unfortunately, whether it's in Raleigh or Charlotte or in Washington, D.C., we've all grown accustomed to homeless people living on our streets, and we just walk right on by as if they're squirrels or pigeons. And it's interesting, in Orlando and Las Vegas, it's legal to feed the pigeons and the squirrels, but God forbid, if you try to feed homeless people, you will be arrested. And I think there should be a little bit of Rosa Parks in all of us. She stood up by sitting down, and when you're arresting church people, synagogue people, for feeding the poor, we should join their ranks and allow ourselves to be arrested.
Now, as far as that goes, now I've been in Washington a few times, and it just amazes me how many homeless are within a block or two or three of the Capitol, especially right off there by the Capitol Hilton down in that area. There's a bunch of folks who are right there on the streets and doorways and the bushes, I mean, hanging out, and it really boggles my mind. I guess it's the dichotomy between seeing these men who are at the seat of power of the free world and looking right across the street, and there's someone who's walking around with a bag on their back and has nowhere to go. I think it crushes me when I see.
Well, you would assume, I guess they call us the world's capital, that we would make sure all these visible social issues would no longer be visible. And, it's interesting that they, other than being close to the White House and the Capitol building, homeless people are all over the National Mall and in front of the museums. And the reason they're there, and the cops know there's no place for these people to go, and they would much rather be dealing with serious crime instead of telling someone to move along. So here in Washington, D.C., very seldom does someone call a police department to say, hey, there's a homeless man sleeping in my doorway. That's just part of the way we all live here in Washington. So people don't complain about it, therefore the cops don't respond, and therefore homeless people get away with sleeping by the government buildings here in Washington, D.C.
Tell me about the newspaper that you guys produce, I think it's the National Coalition for the Homeless. Isn't there a street news or street scene or something like that?
We have a street newspaper that was under our umbrella during the first year. Now it's independent, called Street Sense, and it's a paper made up of that focuses in on poverty issues. It's homeless people write for it. They write poetry. We have four or five columnists. They sell it on street corners in downtown Washington. They sell it for $1. They get to keep 75 cents. I'm on the board for Street Sense. We keep 25 cents to pay for the printing. And it's an alternative to panhandling. The most frequent question I get from the general population, what do I do when I'm approached by a panhandler to give or not to give? And we support the right of people to be asking for money, and we support the right of a tourist to either give or not to give. But that homeless vendor selling the paper, he or she's been certified. They have a name badge. They're sober. When you buy a paper from one of our vendors, you know that the money is going for what they needed it for. And there's about 40 street newspapers throughout Canada and the U.S., and there's another 60 in other parts of the world. So it's a growing, I guess in many ways we're a minority group, and every minority group needs their own media, and this is our way to publicize the issues, because the Washington Post very seldom covers our issues. Even though today they ran a story on the Homeless World Cup championship that we did in Charlotte last weekend in Charlotte, North Carolina, and the Washington, D.C. team got beat really bad because they're all smokers. So if you're going to smoke, don't be a soccer player.
There you go. And who won?
The New York State team. We had 60 people from around the country and the New York State team won, and out of all the teams, we picked an all-star team, and these are people who are either living on the streets or in shelters, and they will be going to Cape Town, South Africa, for the international championship in September, and we pay their way, and so they're really, really excited. So I've encouraged people to check out today's Washington Post to see the failed but proud D.C. team.
That's fantastic. Very quickly, Michael, how can people contribute to your organization? How can they find out more about what you guys are doing?
Our website is nationalhomeless.org, nationalhomeless.org. Our phone number in Washington, D.C. is 202-462-4822. And we're here 7 days a week, 18 hours a day.
Wow, fantastic. Michael Stoops, Executive Director of the National Coalition for the Homeless. Thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate the conversation, and I hope to hear from you soon. We'll have another talk.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Talk to you soon. That's Michael Stoops from the National Coalition for the Homeless. You're listening to the Bruce Birch Radio Program. David Swanson will be up next from Camp Democracy after the news. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Quality News Network. In Brussels, the UN Secretary General met with foreign ministers of European Union nations to discuss the 15,000-member UN peacekeeping force in southern Lebanon. The European countries will contribute the backbone of the force, 6,900 troops. In South Lebanon, the UN reports in the cleanup after the 34-day war, cluster bombs have been found at 285 locations. The U.S. is investigating whether Israel's use of these American-made bombs was a violation of secret agreements. In Jerusalem, a newspaper poll of Israelis reveals that 63% want Prime Minister Ehud Olmert to resign because of the way he handled the recent war. There has also been a large increase in support for the right-wing Likud party. In southern Iraq, the day after a former British base was turned over to Iraqi troops, it was nearly destroyed by looters. The locals reportedly took everything, including doors, metal pipes, roofing, and window frames, as several unarmed Iraqi soldiers stood by and watched. In Mogadishu, Somalia, a woman received 11 lashes at a public square for selling marijuana. She was the first female to be subject to that sort of punishment since the Islamic fundamentalist ruler seized control in June. In Washington, a State Department official faces charges of bribery for accepting trips, meals, and hotel rooms in exchange for speeding up the visa process for employees of a New York-based jewelry company. In Tokyo, five Japanese executives were arrested on suspicion of exporting equipment that could be used to make nuclear weapons. The devices went to Malaysia in 2001. In South Korea, the presidential security advisor said his country will cooperate with China to prevent North Korea from conducting a possible nuclear test. There have been increased reports recently of suspicious activity around a North Korean testing site. During a visit to China, Venezuela's President Hugo Chavez criticized the United States and Israel. He also wants to increase the ties with China, especially in oil development. In Minnesota, at the Mayo Clinic, former President Gerald Ford is still hospitalized after undergoing an angioplasty procedure. On Monday, the 93-year-old received a cardiac pacemaker. New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin defended the delays in the post-Katrina reconstruction by taking a swipe at New York City. He said, quote, "You guys in New York can't get a hole in the ground fixed." You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. CollaborativeDivorce.tv.
AOL has partnered with several Hollywood studios to sell popular movies and television shows online at $10 to $20 per download. Officials at Tennessee's Oak Ridge National Laboratory say the most powerful supercomputer in the U.S. has been upgraded so it now functions at double its previous speed. A federal judge in New York has stopped a proposed strike by Northwest Airlines flight attendants hours before it was to begin by issuing a temporary injunction. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke warned against protectionist policies because he says they could hurt globalization and international trade. Lenovo, the Chinese computer maker, has hired its fourth executive from Dell this week. A Japanese microchip maker has made an image detection chip that can help avoid accidents by controlling various car functions. Toyota may delay some of its models as a way to strengthen quality control and avoid recalls. Bloomberg News is reporting that Ford Motor has begun talks to sell its luxury brands Jaguar and Land Rover. And Robert Rubin, the former U.S. Treasury Secretary, has resigned from Ford Motor's board to avoid a possible conflict of interest because he's also a member of Citigroup, which may provide financing to the troubled automaker. Light sweet crude settled at $72.51 a barrel today, and at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow was down 20 points, the Nasdaq was up 3 points, and the S&P 500 was down 1 point. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Bramoff.
It's time for another hour of conversation radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce.
You're back on the Bruce Birch Radio Program, Radio for a Freer America. That's right, where you may not get smarter, but at least you'll know a little bit more every day. Glad to have you back with me. In this hour, we're going to be focusing on what's going on in D.C. over the next 3 to 4 weeks, and that is Camp Democracy. Now, Camp Democracy is going to be moving from Crawford, Texas, up here to up in this area. I'm in North Carolina, so it's a lot closer than Texas. And joining me on the line right now is David Swanson, who is the press officer for Camp Democracy. David, how are you doing this afternoon?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you. Glad to have you. Now, tell us a little bit about sort of the history of this of this movement or this event and. And you know what you know how you've gotten it to move to D.C. and what you've got going on.
Well, we were hearing from a lot of people, ordinary random people around the country through listservs and in peace organizations. You know, when can we come to Washington? When can we occupy our nation's capital and demand change and refuse to leave? You know, people are seeing what's done in Mexico City, what's done in the Ukraine, what happens in other countries around the world when things get this bad. And so we thought, well, let's help kickstart what should be spontaneously happening in America when things are this bad. And so many of us are aware and concerned and responsible and want to do something about it. And we also are working with Cindy Sheehan, who doesn't want Bush to get away just by leaving Crawford. So she's in Crawford, Texas right now and will be, although she may go to Salt Lake City for a Bush event in coming days. But she will move her camp from Crawford, Texas up to Washington, D.C. on September 5th. And so we will set up there with huge tents and tables, chairs, stage, sound system, etc., and we'll put on a festival, a teach-in, workshops, training sessions, panels of speakers, concert performances, arts and crafts, and so on, for at least up until the 21st of September. just end the war. We're trying to use this to bring together numerous movements, including the movement for electoral reform and for environmental change and for women's rights and for immigrants' rights and for Katrina recovery, and so that these issues that are all connected at the policy level, primarily because all the money is going to the war, need to be connected at the grassroots level as well. So that's part of our mission.
Now, tell me about what you're going to be doing with as far as like some of the events that are going to be going on throughout this period of time. I know that, for instance, Labor Against the War is going to be there. There's going to be a day of the Progressive Democrats are hosting a day. Now, is there going to be like a theme situation every day with different speakers, or how's that going to work?
The 9th and 10th of September, which is a weekend, together with September 11th, which is a Monday, those 3 days, we are avoiding any theme, and we're having numerous activities and panels and workshops and performances going on at once in multiple tents on the Mall in front of the Capitol. Many of the other days, from the 5th through the 20th, we do have a theme for the day, although not every little event will be tied to the theme on a given day. But you mentioned Progressive Democrats of America. That's one group that's sponsoring activities on one day. Camp Democracy is nonpartisan. The Green Party of the United States is also sponsoring Camp Democracy. And if we could get any Republicans, we would. but we'll have a day focused on labor issues. And among other things, working to connect the labor movement with the peace movement, which is something that U.S. Labor Against the War has been working on for years now. And, you know, we'll have nonviolence training throughout the camp. We'll have media speaking and communicating trainings. We'll have radio programs like this one broadcasting live and showing people how to do it. And people will be able to hear and to listen and talk to and sit down with historians like Howard Zinn and movie producers like Robert Greenwald and journalists like John Nichols and Joel Bleifuss and people who used to be in this administration like Anne Wright and Karen Kwiatkowski, former CIA staff, Ray McGovern and Larry Johnson and some others, an endless list of the best trainers in civil disobedience, the best trainers in lobbying Congress, the best in media production and media activism. So it's an opportunity for people who can come to not just immediately pressure the government for fundamental change, but also go away with skills and abilities and connections and motivations that that you didn't come with, and have a great time in the process.
Now, tell me about some of the speakers that you've got lined up. Are there going to be major event days, or are there going to be or is every day going to be a major event day?
Well, I think every day there are going to be major events. The opening day is September 5th. And it's being put together by Veterans for Peace, together with Cindy's group, Gold Star Families for Peace, and Military Families Speak Out, and Iraq Veterans Against the War. And so there will be a war focus the first day. The second day, we're going to have several members of Congress, and we've been talking with some senators, and we want them to come down and talk to us and to hear from us, because even the best progressive Democrats in Congress need to hear what we're thinking and where we think they need to be going, and so we'll be inviting them to come down and meet with us, and several will, at least on the 6th. And then, you know, the 7th is Immigrants' Rights Day, the 8th is the Labor Speaks Out Day, and the 9th, 10th, and 11th, we are making huge days with all kinds of speakers and performers, and because it's a weekend, the crowd will inevitably grow, but there's a theme and an agenda for each day up through the 21st. And, you know, the 17th is a favorite of mine because it's focused on accountability and impeachment. And we plan to have a long list of authors and experts and academics, John Nichols, who's written a book called The Genius of Impeachment, Marcus Raskin, who worked for the Security Council under Kennedy and worked on Nixon's impeachment and has some books out, Elizabeth de la Vega, a former federal prosecutor who's actively pushing for impeachment, Dave Lindorf, who's written The Case for Impeachment, Elizabeth Holtzman, who was a congresswoman actively working on the Nixon impeachment, and on and on and on. Speakers and activists, and we'll show a film about impeachment. We'll have dramatic performances. We'll have workshops and discussions. And so the idea is that you know, anyone can come to the camp, and it will be a gathering place with lots of room for people to do what they want spontaneously. But there will also be great activities already scheduled. To bring out crowds and to let people learn about other movements they aren't working on every day, and to bring the media and let the country and the world know what we're thinking.
That's fantastic. I think I think this is a wonderful, wonderful idea, and I certainly hope that that you know it is a resounding success. We'll do everything we can here at Head On Radio Network to promote it and try to drive folks there as well. So, we got to do something to take our country back. And I think this is a perfect beginning of trying to bring the masses there to D.C. so that they can see that we're tired of and fed up, fed up.
That's what we're calling it Camp Democracy at Fort Fed Up because we're fed up. Enough's enough. And this is do or die time. This is Germany in the 30s. This is sliding in a dangerous direction, and people have got to put their bodies where their mouths are and find the time and come to D.C. And so we're trying to make it as enjoyable and fruitful a way for people to do that. And people who go to campdemocracy.org can find free rides, free rooms to stay in, can sign up to volunteer and be involved. And I would encourage everybody to do so and get some buses coming from wherever you are.
Now that begs the question: how can people find out about rides, about rooms might be available for them to stay, et cetera? How do they go about doing that?
Well, just go to campdemocracy.org and look at the top, click on housing or transportation or. Right near the top, it says, here are free rooms and rides, and that will take you straight to a board where you can, if you're in the general D.C. area, please, please help out by offering a room. You'll get to know and learn from activists from around the country who are dedicated to justice and willing to come and put in the time. But if you're not in the D.C. area, request a room and look at the rooms that are offered, and the same with rides. There may be already some cars, vans, buses from your area that have some seats offered, and you can ask for one. Or if not, you can offer a couple of seats in your car. And if you can get a bus together, you can. And with buses, we may be able to help you some with the cost. So get in touch with us. But you can post cool. that bus, and this rides board will help to fill it with people.
That's fantastic, and that's probably going to be as always the biggest impediment is the funding for people, you know. So having free places to stay and getting a rideshare situation going on and sponsoring buses, that's fantastic. Now, they can go to campdemocracy.org. Is that right?
That's the place.
What can people do to help if they can't make it that day, or throughout the period of time?
Well, at this time in the weeks leading up, people can help tremendously by spreading the word. And if you go to campdemocracy.org and you click at the very top where it says spread the word, you'll find a guide to holding a local event where you can raise money to contribute, or you can plan a trip to come, or you can raise money to pay for your trip to come. Well, you'll find a local press release you can use, modified to suit you about any such activities. You'll find a way to make appointments with your Congress members on the 19th, which we're asking everyone to do so that we can send everyone up to the Hill on September 19th to lobby. You'll find email announcements, flyers, graphics to put on your website, a public service announcement to ask your local radio stations to play. There's an audio file there, shirts you can buy, etc. If you can spread the word and if you can afford to contribute any small amount of money, your name will be posted and credited with gratitude, unless you ask to be anonymous. And it will help because, as you said, we need money, and this is being funded by the various organizations involved and by generous individuals around the country. I know that you'll hear on the so-called mainstream media that George Soros and Barbara Streisand and such evil liberals are funding efforts like this, but it just isn't true. And every dollar we're bringing in and every dollar we're spending is posted publicly on the website.
Well, David, I you know, fantastic. You guys are doing the work that needs to be done, and I look forward to shaking your hand when I show up there to do a broadcast. Yeah, that's, I hadn't quite announced it yet, but I guess we will now, huh?
I'm sorry if I let something out of the bag there.
No, it's okay. It's okay. We were just sort of, you know, hammering out the details. We you know, obviously we're planning to be there on the 8th and perhaps into the morning on the 9th and talking, you know, we're just going to see how it goes. We may do a marathon there. We're sort of in the negotiation stage of trying to figure out exactly how long we want to broadcast. We may go from 5 until whenever we decide that it's time to crash. I don't know. But we're really looking forward to being there. So
we're looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to shaking your hand. And if you have time in between broadcasts and you want to do a workshop and tell people how you do radio, that would be tremendous as well.
Well, we may very well do that. David, I really appreciate you joining me today, and we'll stay in touch as the week progresses into the next week, and we may have you back on again or have someone back on again to talk about the kickoff and that kind of thing next Friday. I'd love to, you know, have somebody down on site to come on and at least tell us what's happening.
Sounds great. I'd be glad to, or we've got lots of other people to choose from.
Fantastic. All right, David. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show today and telling us all about it. Now, folks can go to campdemocracy.org, isn't that right? And they can actually donate to the organization right there?
They can donate. They can sign up to stay informed. They can volunteer to help, and they can look for rides and rooms.
Sounds great, David. Thanks for joining me this afternoon, and we'll get up with you again real soon, probably about this same time next week.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Have a great afternoon and good luck. And I hope everything gets kicked off in a good way. And that was David Swanson of Camp Democracy. You can go to campdemocracy.org and you can sign up for rides. I noticed on there there's a discount for air travel to get into D.C. to go to this event. Now it's going to be lasting from the 5th through the 21st, and that's about 3 weeks. So you got plenty of a big window to go and check out what's going on. The entire schedule of all the events is up on the web there at campdemocracy.org. We are planning to be there and broadcasting live there in a couple of weeks on the 8th, I believe it is. And, you know, who knows? We may be there. We may have a larger presence, who knows? That's all we're going to say. Who knows? I'm going to take a very, 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 very fast, well, let's see, it's 6:23. Yeah, let's go ahead and take our break, and we'll come back and do a little short segment. So if you want to get in on the show today, now's the time to go ahead and give me a ring. It's 1-877-443-2366. It's time to bring the people Into the Horn here at the Head On Radio Network. This is the Bruce Birch radio program, and I'll be right back right after this break.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my Progressive Point of View, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. If you've had a house on the market recently, or if you know someone who has, you didn't need to wait for the report from the National Association of Realtors on Wednesday. You already knew the news. The housing market stinks right now. In July, home sales fell by 4.1%, and the number of unsold homes on the market reached a record for the second consecutive month, the New York Times said. Not a surprise. I've got a good friend who bought a new house on the expectation that he'd sell his old one, but he can't find a buyer to save his life, and he can't carry two houses at once, so he's forced to sell his new one and stay in his old one. And for people who bought their homes at the height of the market and now have to move for job or family reasons, they're facing a big loss. This depressed and depressing housing market is going to drag the economy down. Two out of every three American adults own a home. When they see the value of their single biggest investment erode month by month, they're going to spend less. When they see their interest payments rise, as they have been, they're spending less. And when American consumers spend less, the economy sputters. I blame Alan Greenspan. He engineered the rise in interest rates that have caused the housing bubble to burst. At least the current Fed chief, Ben Bernanke, has had the good sense to put that to a halt. But that won't make your home or your friend's home sell any faster today. The damage has already been done. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Don't let him get you. This is the Bruce Birch radio program. Welcome back. It's about 26 minutes past the hour. Let's go ahead straight over to our free speech phone lines. And our good friend Sarge from Mississippi is joining us on line one. Sarge, how you doing, my friend?
Doing good, Bruce. And I didn't call you Bob today.
That's a good thing.
But I may have to go Bruce Bob, so I'll be sure and get it right.
There you go.
Listen, I want to talk about this homeless situation, and
okay.
I really applaud you for having this show because it is a very, very important issue. Of course, we got a lot of it here in Mississippi.
Oh yeah, of course.
And one of the things that I just don't think people are aware of enough is the fact that this was about a year to a year and a half ago, but the statistics were 33% of the homeless were veterans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is just, you know, mind-boggling. Why?
It is. And you know, the other part of that, too, is that that number, as Michael Stoops said earlier, that number is actually rising because we have, I mean, we have people who have come back from the occupation that is currently going on, mm-hmm. and are homeless now. I mean, they're actually in this. I mean, they came back and were completely unable to function back in this society as a result of some of the experiences they had, and they're in the streets now. You know.
Well, you know, one thing you probably already know this, but for those that don't live in the South, they might not understand it. But one of the things is that the South really is so held on to by the Southern Baptist, and they will take one case of a homeless person being a drunk or doing something illegal, and they will magnify it, and they'll establish a stereotype, and people will begin to say all homeless people are like this. It's just like someone in the Katrina hit area does something bad, then all of a sudden it's everybody in the Katrina hit area is doing it, you know.
Right.
And I don't know how we're going to stop this. I know these idiots like Limbaugh and my distant relative Ann Coulter are spreading these lies and magnifying them. Of course, you'll never get Ann to tell her story about what happened at the Peter Coulter reunion, but I'll tell it.
What happened?
She came. My mother was a Coulter, and so I'm a descendant of the Peter Coulter line. Ann also is a descendant of it, and she came to a reunion several years ago, and she was so obnoxious, so vile, so vulgar that before long everybody just started running from her. They just, you know, she was just ungodly, egotistical, rude, just, you know, any word you want to apply, it fitted to her. And after the reunion, they took her off the invitation list. They moved the reunion to another location, and they tell everybody when they get on the list, under no circumstances tell Ann Coulter where we are.
That's crazy. You know, and that says a lot for her. I mean, she, you know, she's rejected by her own family now.
Well, her dad was a union.
It must really suck to be her, right?
Well, you know, she's wanting the money. That's all it is. She's just playing the game to get rich, and I hope she enjoys that money because that's about all she has in life. And
she'll be all alone and with a pocket full of money, you know.
Yeah, I mean, hey, that's, you know, as for me, I think I could do without the money, but you know, some people are like that. But
I'd rather have the friends. I'd rather have I'd rather have people around me who care about me and who want me in their lives than have a pocket full of money and no friends, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, money, it's like my adopted parents, they were these fascist types themselves, and they pretty much had little to do with my twin sister and I after we got 17, because to them, we just didn't fit into their pattern of life. We were supposed to be these spoiled brat types, I guess.
Right.
And once you don't follow suit with that plan they have for you, then they disown you. And like in the, when my adopted father died, my adopted mother actually cheated. And she took my part and my sister's part of the estate. And then when she died, in her will, she left my twin sister and I only a part of the estate, and most of it went to her 79-year-old sister. So that's how these people are. They just don't have any sense of morality, and yet they'll run around and talk Christianity like they were appointed by God. And it is sick. And that's what the homelessness problem in this area is. The VA also contributes a lot to it, because I know when I came back from Las Vegas, my knee was swelling so bad that I could hardly walk. And I had to wait for 2 weeks to get on a list to get back in to the VA. Even though there was empty beds, the board had to meet, and they would not meet for 2 weeks. So for 2 weeks, I was on the streets.
See, there's no excuse for that. None at all.
It's just, you know, this area is so ungodly, because I've been in Hattiesburg and seen people with signs that said, I will work for food. And the people in the Waffle House be sitting there saying, look at that trashy SOB out there. why don't he go out and get a job? So, I mean, that's the mentality. And we've got to change it.
We've got to change it. Well, it's my hope that, like some of the programming like we did today with Michael Stoops, knowledge is power in my view. And if you are armed with facts and armed with knowledge, then, sometimes you can shake the will of some of these folks who have just decided they're going to believe whatever, Jim Bob says down at the gas station about the homeless guy on the corner.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, but I do appreciate you calling in, Sarge, and hopefully Monday, and I'm hoping I'll hear from you Monday, because I want next week focus on some Katrina related stuff.
Well, let me pass on to you. I'll give you the information by email, but there is a man I would love for you to interview, and you will really be glad you did. His name is Jim Yancey, and he's got several titles that he's really involved in the recovery, and he gives me a lot of my information, and I think you would just really just be astounded by what all he can tell you.
Well, I'll definitely drop me an email with his information, and I'll go ahead and get in touch with him either today or Monday for sure.
I sure will. And before I hang up, I'm not going to go into them, but everybody can go to www.homelessveterans.org. It's an Ogden, Utah situation. I posted about it in the chat room. But every community should try working on this, because it's working in Ogden, Utah. The city is even involved. So
it's fantastic.
This would be something that I wish more communities would be involved in.
Well, and you're absolutely right. And communities need to be more involved in these efforts. I think the answer to homelessness lies within each homeless person. But I also think that the solutions, the funding for these issues has to come from all levels of government and all levels of society. You know, at some point we're going to have to say, we got to get these folks off the street because it's just, it's a travesty that they're there. It absolutely is.
Well, I'm going to be on the Randy Rhoads show on the 29th. Mike Malloy is hosting, and he's asked me to call in and give something to say, about Katrina.
Uh-huh.
So I hope some people might drop in and hear our interview.
Well, sure. I'll definitely I'll pass it along too. So that's on the 29th, and you got to call here too, man.
Oh, I will. I'm the correspondent for PowersandMorrison.com to Horn. I that's my job, buddy. Great job, isn't it?
It pays good, huh?
Well, I like the results of it.
There you go.
Sometimes
Bruce, the pay isn't always in money. There you go.
Bruce, thank you so much. I'm going to let you go, and I appreciate you giving me this time.
No problem, Sarge, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend, my friend, and I'll see you Monday.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right. That's our good friend Sarge from down in Mississippi, who is just a wonderful guy. He's working on reporting what's happening down there, or I should say what's not happening down there in the Katrina recovery effort. Here we are almost a year later, and there's still folks, many, 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 many people who are out of homes and have nowhere to go. I need to take a very fast couple-minute break, and then when I come back, we're going to head right back to the phones. We've got a couple people online. Guys, just hang on. We'll get right to you. You're listening to the Bruce Birch Radio Program. This is the Head On Radio Network, and I'm Bruce, and I'll be right back.
Did you hear them talking about it on the radio? Did you try to read the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Native American culture has helped shape many things, from the structure of the U.S. government to the foods we eat at the dinner table. But where Indians lack presence are newsrooms. I'm Brian Bull of the Nez Perce Tribe of Idaho and a member of the Native American Journalists Association. Please go to NAJA.com and learn how you can join. We need people familiar with Native culture to tell our stories and set the record straight against stereotypes and misperceptions. NAJA, raising the next generation of storytellers.
At this moment, more than 800 million people are hungry. Millions more live in poverty. And you wonder, what can I do? Join the thousands of caring people who let Heifer International be their helping hands in the world. Right now, from Appalachia to Zimbabwe, Heifer is helping thousands of families become more self-reliant through the gifts of livestock and learning. Heifer provides farm animals that produce milk, eggs, and other products. That means milk to drink and products like cheese to sell. Having income means families can have better housing and health care, and their children can go to school. And recipients share their success, passing on the gift of their animal offspring to other families in need, ensuring dignity, self-reliance, and hope for the future. Find out how you can make a difference today at heifer.org. That's HEIFER.org.
Alright, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. We're about 20 minutes before the top of the hour. Let's go right back to the phones. We have a new caller on the line, Bill from Tampa, Florida. Bill, how are you doing today?
This is Phil from Daytona Beach, Florida.
I'm sorry.
That's
Phil
okay.
From Daytona Beach.
Do you want to go to Bill or?
No, let's,
nope.
Well, you're on.
I'm
let's
on.
Let's,
All right.
let's
hey,
have a conversation.
Great show, Bruce, and
thank you.
Thanks for having me. Call in or taking my call, whatever, you know what I'm saying.
Well, glad to have you here.
Yeah, always good to hear Sarge reporting reality. And I'm glad to learn about the horn and heard about it through that Powers and Morrison chat room where there's their website's a wealth of information. Great
it sure
information.
Is. But they
I
do a lot
wanna,
of good work.
Say I'm here in Daytona Beach, Florida, not far from Orlando, where they did pass that city ordinance making it illegal to actually feed fellow Americans who need food, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And right here within the last year, we had a couple of, 18, 20, 22-year-old kids beat to death a homeless man. I'm not sure if he was a veteran or not, but they just beat him to death. And I wanted to tie this to what David Swanson was talking about.
Okay.
You know, where he mentioned a few things. You know, we're in really dangerous times right now. He mentioned Germany, 1933. And he said we have to put our bodies where our mouths are. You know, it's time to. There's a lot of concerned Americans. It's been 5-6 years with this government. We've been allowing it to act as it has been, and we have to take it to the next level in this camp democracy. If you could get up there or participate in some way. And the website is great. It does offer so many different ways to get involved. And just people got to start giving up a few hours of their television regimen each week and put their bodies somewhere, man, other than the couch and the television.
I know, because that thing, man, that you know what, Phil, I would venture to guess that the television itself is probably the single most nefarious enemy to democracy that exists in America today.
My father used to say when we were kids back in the 60s, you know, the rabbit ears, you turn the TV with a pair of pliers, the knob, you know. He used to point to it and say it's more powerful than an atom bomb and it would be the weapon that defeats us. And, you know, if we all took an inventory and really counted up the amount of hours we spend in front of that $100, you know. And if we could just give up one or two hours and get involved, we have to get up to Washington. I don't know if I'll be able to, but these politicians have not done a darn thing. There hasn't been enough of a fire under their asses to do anything. The war keeps going on, and it looks like they're selling this war for Iran now, and there's no opposition. And they're not going to do anything until there's enough fire under their rear ends, and that means getting up there to Washington and giving them a little heat. And now's the time, because November elections are coming up, and they're more apt to listen if they're worried about getting reelected. This is an opportunity to actually make a change, and don't pass it up.
Well, I totally agree with you. And are you planning on heading up for a period of time yourself, Phil? I'd like to be.
You know, I'm one of the people without a job and without an income, and it really is hard to do stuff. I was up in Washington last year, and I did meet with my congressman. And actually, I'm going to post my report on that on the Powers and Morrison website under the two fills. And folks can go to powersandmorrison.com and read. You know, I did actually sit down with my congressman, and nothing's changed in a year except we've had how many more thousands of people die in Iraq. You know,
three thousand people died in, over 3,000. I think it was actually closer to 4,000 people.
Yeah, in 1 month.
Died in 1 month. Yeah, but freedom's on the march, Phil. Freedom's on the march.
And let's keep calling it what it is: an occupation. And you don't win an occupation. Nobody wins. And it's an occupation. It's been an occupation for over 3 years. And terror, a war on terror. Let's call that what it is. Terror is a behavior. You can't declare war on a behavior. We got to start calling these people and speak locally. You know,
yes.
We've got to engage people in the grocery store lines. You know, it's awkward as hell, but whenever I can, and I know you have other callers, but I wear my I'm a member of Veterans for Peace. I wear shirts. That's the Veterans for Peace shirt. Or I have an Impeach Bush and Cheney shirt that I got from David Swanson's AfterDowningStreet.org website. You can order them there. And, you know, and it strikes up a conversation. And I engage my fellow neighbors, you know, in the grocery store line or at the gas station, whatever. We got to be the news, because the news on the television and in the newspapers and corporate-owned radio, they're lying again. They're lying to get us into Iran. So we got to be the news. We can't wait for them to come around.
Well, I totally agree with you.
I appreciate what you do. And great show, Bruce. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. Thanks for joining us, and I certainly hope you give us make us a part of your regular radio diet, my friend.
You bet. And is it only available on the internet or Horn? I'm a new listener.
We are presently only available on the internet. We're working on some other things right now. Got some other irons in the fire, but as of right now, that's how you can get us is via the internet stream.
So let's keep the internet net neutrality. You know, that's another issue that we've got to stand up and try to save. And this is a great network, and I'm going to keep telling people about the Horn and try to keep supporting it. And you guys are doing a heck of a job, and the radio programs are slick. They're professional. The hosts are great. The news reports are great. Thank you so much for what you're doing.
Well, Phil, that's a very tall compliment, my friend, and I really do appreciate it. And I certainly hope you get back on with us again and again and again and again. So have a wonderful weekend, okay?
Thank you, Bruce.
All right. That is our new friend, Phil from Daytona Beach, Florida. Glad to have you aboard. Let's go right over to our good friend, Jim, who is calling from an undisclosed location. Jim, how are you doing this afternoon?
Okay, how are you, Bruce?
I'm rocking right along.
I see. You know, in regards to your first segment about the homeless, I was just thinking of a quote from, I think it's Julius Caesar. for the deaf, the princess is very heaven's blaze force, but for those who are beggars, no lights are seen. And I think that basically epitomizes the attitude of America towards the disadvantaged and the homeless, no lights. And I think the attitude of American society toward these people is one of, I'll coin a word here if it's not already in existence. It's very disinvitational. It's very disinviting.
Yes.
And
I agree. You know, I was talking with a friend the other day, and he said to me, the Pledge of Allegiance ends with liberty and justice for all? And he looked at me sideways and he said, for those who can afford it.
Well, you know, in this country, unless you fit into a certain gestalt or pattern, society is not very friendly. And basically we're talking about a very simple fact, unless you have a dollar in your pocket or unless you have certain means. I mean, I understand that there are certain places that they arrest you unless you have $20 on your person for being a vagrant.
Oh, yeah.
If that's true or not. But I mean, you know, when you're dealing with people like these,
Jim, at the very least, they're escorted out of the places where they shouldn't be because they don't have money and they don't have a permanent address. I mean, that happens all the time.
On personal domicile fixe, a person without fixed domicile, right? And, you know, you were talking about your own work with these people, and if you're going to do anything with these people, I mean, you look at Maslow and his hierarchy of needs. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Absolutely, yes.
And, you know, at the very basis of that pyramid, you have food, clothing, and shelter. In order to reach any type of self-actualization or change in attitude of a person, you're going to have certain basic needs met in order to make them a functioning unit in society.
Absolutely.
And we spend so much money in making people dysfunctioning units in society. For example, these poor guys that are coming back from Iraq, And I see what has happened to them, and for what reason. It makes me very angry, and it's made me quite ill. And, you know, and our attitudes towards them and towards anybody who has been damaged, you know, it's like a sea of fish in the sea, a sea of barracuda. When anybody in our society exhibits any type of sign of asymmetrical behavior, it's almost a signal for the rest of the barracudas of the herd to fall in and bite them in two. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I do absolutely, yes.
And
I do absolutely.
Our attitudes towards people who have problems with alcohol and drug and the problems that created those problems, because I think the research is now beginning to show that some of these things are beyond the person's control. They're almost genetic in nature. That there is a genetic disposition toward dependency situations and, of course, the horrible consequences of those situations. In this country, supposedly the greatest nation in the world, we have such lack of compassion and lack of resources. I mean, $1.3 billion, that's all. I mean, good Lord, this state alone could absorb that, just like Sarge said. And as Sarge was talking about yesterday, he was talking about when these men come out of the Army, or I say the Army, for example, I mean, if you're like 11 Bravo series, which is straight leg infantry, there's not much job for you out on the street there, you know? If you're a 54 Echo or a communications specialist, that's one thing, or a 74 Foxtrot. And I'm talking about MOSs in the military. A communications specialist, there is. But for these guys who are grunts and, you know, shoulder a weapon, 11 Bravo series, Charlie's and Hotels, there's nothing much there for you. And I can understand why the situation has developed the way it has.
Yeah, and not only that, but then, you know, obviously the issues, you know, the other issues of trauma and, you know, abusive.
Well, it goes without saying.
You know, it goes without saying. All that other stuff that happens that can haunt a person for the rest of their lives.
Well, should I say, it definitely goes with saying, but it's just swept under the rug and hushed up, and these people are just not given proper treatment modalities, and it's a real mess. It really is. Well, listen, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jim, for calling in. I really appreciate it, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Likewise, you too. And, you know, don't let your big monster out there get your visa proven.
I won't. Actually, you know where I'm going tonight, Jim? I'm going to see Leon Russell play.
Good Lord, walk on a tightrope, that guy?
Yeah, that guy.
My Lord, have mercy.
He's in Greensboro tonight.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I haven't heard that name in years. Jesus, Lord.
I thought you might get a kick out of that.
My God. Wait a minute. I think we used to go up to Greensboro for concerts and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think that, was it Greensboro back in some of those days? Bruce, I don't remember where I was.
Well, that might be a good thing, Jim.
I remember going to Atlanta a lot to the Electric Alex Cooley's Electric Ballroom and Circus and doing that overnight. And good Lord, that was I kept a diary. Well, now it's keeping me.
I'll definitely will report on the show on Monday. I'll let you know how good he is. I'm sure he's got to be in his 60s now, right?
He's pushing it. He'd been rocking for a long time when I was coming through.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, listen, enjoy.
I certainly will.
Okay. Nice.
Have a great weekend, Jim. Good to talk to you. All right. Bye now. That's our good friend Jim from an undisclosed location somewhere in the Northern Hemisphere. I think he's come down from the Moronosphere and is now back into the hemisphere. Just as a quick wrap up today, our good friend, our new friend, Phil, who is one of the bloggers over at powersandmorrison.com, is also a member of Veterans for Peace in Daytona Beach, Florida, made a very good point. And that point is that all of these issues are tied together. All of these issues are tied together. You know, we're funding a war in Iraq that is, going to be going to, or here I go again, an occupation in Iraq that is going to cost well over $500 billion before it's all over with. And yet for this last fiscal year, guess how much money was spent on homelessness programs? $1.3 billion. So, it amazes me. It just absolutely amazes me that we are only going to spend $1 for every 300 or whatever in Iraq. $1 for every $300 in Iraq is going to go to help people here in the United States of America. That is absolutely criminal. And yes, they are tied together. Yes, they're absolutely tied together. Now, again, we had David Swanson on, and David is the press guy, and also over at afterdowningstreet.org, a wonderful website, and they do great work. Go to Camp Democracy. And take part in those festivities that are going to be happening in Washington, D.C. over the next 3 weeks. 4 weeks, I'm sorry, at this point. Because, the reality is, folks, is that until we put our feet in the street and until we make a concerted effort to try to take back America, they're not going to give it back. I mean, they're not going to stand there and go, okay, we're done with America now, you can have it back. That's not going to happen. Okay? What is going to happen is, we have to go to those places. We have to make our voices heard. We have to stand out front, and when they and take the bullet if it's what's required. We have to do that, because if we don't do that, the successive generations of this country are going to grow up in a country that we will not recognize. It will not be what we thought it was going to be. You are responsible, listener, for making that happen. You, not me, or me too, but, us talking heads, we can talk all day long, but you know what? Where the rubber meets the road is where your actions come into play. So thank you. If you are being a part of that, or if you are going to be a part of it, thank you. If you're not, then please consider doing so, and do some actions in your own communities. Because, public opinion has changed not when people are watching the evening news. Public opinion has changed when people are hanging out and kicking it and having a barbecue and doing what they're doing on the side. So thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate it. Any day that I'm on the air is a good day for me. I certainly hope it's